Welcome to the Totem Figures Podcast. I'm TJ Daw. Lindsay Robertson is a Vancouver-based singer-songwriter, originally from Guelph, Ontario. Her totems are Bob Marley, Tom Waits, Bob Dylan, Martin Tielli, and Bessie Smith. We started out talking about Bob Marley.
All right, tell me about Bob Marley.
I got into Bob Marley when I was a teenager. It was the 90s. And there stopped being music that I liked on the radio or with my friends. So I went looking for music. I went searching for it. And I ended up getting this old reggae album that wasn't Legend. It was some old compilation. And then I started buying like a different Bob Marley album once a month. And then eventually bought this box set with all these old recordings from Jamaica.
So what kept you coming back for more?
Well, there was so much more to discover. It kept being good to me, and it kept having meaning. It was music with meaning, because he had such a passion and such a mission, as opposed to be on the radio, or to be a rock star, or to be popular, or to sound a certain way.
And what was that mission?
Bob Marley was trying to spread unity and oneness.
I said things are not the way they used to be. Don't tell no lies. One and all got to face reality now. Though I try to find the answer to all the questions they ask, though I know it's impossible to go living through my past, don't keep them down.
Probably one of the best known faces at any corner of the world that you go to. There's so, Bob Marley t-shirts everywhere in the world, and everyone knows.
Which he predicted himself, didn't he?
Yeah, you're right, he did.
Yeah,
in an interview.
He
said that his music would live forever, which sounds pompous, but it didn't come out in a pompous way. He meant it. I don't know how he meant it.
He also happened to have been right.
Yeah, that's true. He was right.
Do you have any favorite songs of his?
Yep. Burning and Looting is one of my favorite songs. Well,
then what do you like about that song?
Well, first of all, I like the groove. I love the way it sounds. I love the sound of his voice. I love sort of the old school revolution and rebellion of it. It's about taking control and standing up and having a say in the world and the creating of it, and rights, poverty, global citizenship.
Do you think his well-known songs, his biggest hits, are good representations of who he is and what he does?
I don't think that they're a full representation. They're certainly the ones that work best on the radio. Those ones on Legend, most of those were American-produced or American-enhanced. For example, Catch a Fire, which is one of my favorite albums. There's two versions of it. There's a Jamaican recording of it, and then the American recording of it. I actually had a copy of the album where it had a couple of the songs. One of the Jamaican recording, one of the American recording, duplicates of it. One of the songs was Stirred Up, which is one of his popular ones. The produced the American production one, I always found really annoying. There's kind of an annoying sound to it. The Jamaican one is a lot better.
Better in what way?
It has a lot more character, you know? It sounds like it came from a Jamaican recording studio. You know, it doesn't sound like a super polished version of it.
Since I've got you on my mind.
So what ultimately would you say Bob Marley's influences on you as a person or as an artist?
Well, as an artist, that's interesting because stylistically, I'm not influenced by him. Probably in spirit and in passion.
And how would you describe that spirit and that passion?
He was always so earnest in a really unembarrassed way. So passionate and so thoughtful and with such purpose and such mission. Saw a bigger picture. As a worldview, I think that's a good one to take. There's something to be said for unity.
Did I hear the words of the Ayaman
The first album I heard was Rain Dogs. A friend of mine brought it over and was so enthusiastic about it and just loved it and put it on. At first, I wasn't necessarily moved by it too much because it sounded like all these crunchy sounds, and it was probably a shitty tape, like a shitty old recorded tape on a crappy ghetto. And I was just kind of like, oh, great, thanks, that's good. So that was my first introduction to that. But then that friend and I became roommates before we got into a relationship. And he had more Tom Waits around. And then I started listening to more and more of it. So I got into the early year stuff first.
Which is pretty accessible as far as Tom Waits' body work goes.
Yeah, exactly.
Really simple. And
a lot of them having a bit of a country sound, which was new to me. I typically didn't like any kind of country.
Well, I hope that I don't fall in love with you.
But it's not twangy country.
It's not twangy, yeah. It was more raw country, and a lot of it was really sparse with just guitar and vocals and great songwriting, and I loved it. And that's what I got into.
Well, the music plays and you display your heart for me to see. I had a beer and now I hear you calling out for me.
And then I started, again, like I did with Bob Marley, I started my own thing where I would go probably about once a month and buy a new album and get into it. And then I'd buy a new album and get into it. And eventually came back around to Rain Dogs that I heard on that cassette about a year before and loved it, of course. Fell madly in love with Rain Dogs and eventually got most of his albums. Musically, he's one of my biggest influences. Bob Marley, not so much in the way that I don't play reggae, but Tom Waits influenced me more so. The style from the earlier stuff, some of that bare bones blues, minor key songs, chord progressions and patterns. I didn't see it happening in my early years quite as much, because when I was first actually really learning how to play the guitar, I was listening to tons and tons of Tom Waits. So it wasn't until years later where I could actually play songs fluidly and start writing my own songs. A lot of them came out with his influence for sure.
When will you hear me out? Listen to this voice, I don't shout. There's no one around. They picked up their pints and went home. And yes, that's as sad as it sounds. The night shift is over, let's go.
I loved how unique he was. It sounded like he was a master of sound. It came across on his music that that's exactly how he wanted it to sound. And he got it. You know, like all his click-clacks and all his, you know, strange percussion and tinny sounds or wooden sounds or the different way he uses his vocals, the different effects. That wasn't an accident. It was full control.
Well, he came home from the war with a party in his head, a modified program to fill. That opened up like butterfly wings, and a mad dog who wouldn't sit still. Went and took up with a Salvation Army band group. They
played dirty water from a swordfish trombone. It went to sleep at the bottom.
Beautiful, beautiful songwriting, beautiful lyrics. Every time a new Tom Waits album came out, I'd always hold my breath thinking, oh, is this going to be the one I hate? Is this going to be one of the one that sucks? That's going to disappoint me? And it never happened. I haven't always liked every single song, but I've always gotten something. I just feel like he lives and breathes his musicianship. And that he's a master.
In a room above a hardware store, crying nothing there but Hollywood tears. Put a spell on some border to Crutchfield, girl. Stayed like that for 20
years. Tell me about Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan. I was a little later in my 20s at this point. Again, I was reaching back, and I'd always known some Dylan songs, and I'd had friends who were fans, and my mom liked Bob Dylan. Not that it was on in the house all the time or anything. Yeah, with him, it was his early stuff first that appealed to me.
I'm wondering if she remembers me at all. Many times I've often prayed in the darkness of my night, in the brightness of my day.
A couple of similarities with both Bob Marley and Tom Waits. The songwriting. He was an incredible songwriter. Sometimes his lyrics were so simple yet so beautiful that I couldn't believe it.
From the crossroads of my doorstep, my eyes start to fade. And I turn my head back to the room where my love and I have laid. And I gaze back to the street, the sidewalk, and the sign. And I'm one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind.
It's sometimes really complex and convoluted, and you wondered how the hell he ever sat down and came up with such a thing, you know?
Oh, what did you see, my blue-eyed son? And what did you see, my darling young one? I saw a newborn baby with wild wolves all around it. I saw highway diamonds with nobody on it. I saw a black branch with blood that kept dripping. So room full of men with their hammers a-bleeding. I saw a white ladder all covered with water. I saw 10,000 talkers whose tongues were all broken. I saw guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. And it's hard, it's hard, it's hard. And it's a hard, it's a hard rain, they're gonna fall.
And in the way, like Bob Marley, he had this sort of mission, this political mission, and he was young and full of juice and saw so many of the injustices in the world, and that's what he wanted to sing about. It's not that he wanted to lead a revolution necessarily, but that's what inspired him to write those songs. He was also really bold in his time, really brave, kind of a prick sometimes, you know, young and smug and whatever, but also really funny.
What do you think the fact that he's just turned 70 and he's still doing it, still putting out original and creative material?
Yeah, I think it's great. It hasn't spoken to me as much. Some of it's been really good for sure, but again, it says to me that he's been a lifelong musician and that that's what he was, that's what he wanted to be.
Just like Tom Waits.
Just like Tom Waits. And Bob Marley, I believe, would have been too if he didn't die so early.
Someone who puts out original material that's true to who they are and what they want to say, whether it's fashionable, whether it sells or not.
They were all pioneers. They were all really unique in their, you know, in their fields.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is true, but it looks to me like they're the kind of people that can see and hear exactly what they wanted to create, and then they did it, and then they had the skill to do it. The skill and the tenacity, not always the means, but still we're able to do it.
And take me disappearing through the smoke rings of my mind, down the foggy ruins of time, far past the frozen leaves, the haunted, frightened trees,
out to the windy beach, far from the twisted reach of crazy sorrow. Yes, to dance beneath the diamond sky with one hand waving free, silhouetted by the sea, circled by the circus sands, with all memory and fate driven deep beneath the waves. Let me forget about today until tomorrow. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man.
Martin Tielli, I guess we'd have to fuse in there, because for me he was a more of a local influence. Because I grew up in Guelph, and we'd see the Rio Statics play at the music festivals and local venues, and the smaller towns around Guelph, Kitchener, Waterloo, and of course Toronto, and that kind of thing. So I started seeing him with the Rio Statics.
And different from seeing Bob Dylan, who, if you ever see him, he's in a stadium, or Tom Waits, who you
exactly
aren't likely to see.
Exactly.
Bob Marley, who you cannot see.
Yeah, but on a more local scene, they were kind of stars.
Right, but stars that you can get within 10 feet of.
Yeah, exactly.
Selfless, and they don't do nothing worthless. They just work all day and worry about their son. What went wrong with Martin? Is he dumb?
And as you got older and you saw them play in like bars that you'd frequent, they'd be around and people you knew would know them, you know? Rio Statics was a really interesting band because they really had like three frontmen. Dave Bedini being probably the frontman, and he wrote and performed songs, but so did Martin Tielli and so did Tim Vesely. They all did. But Martin was my favorite. Musically, his songs and his voice and his lyrics always appealed to me. Lyrically, he's probably a bit abstract. More so than any of the other totems. Quirky, really interesting, somewhat fantastical.
In this world, our streets and avenues, and all around, there is and all around there's and then there's this forgotten little murmur. They call nothing much at all.
Martin Tielli's guitar style, his electric guitar style, and acoustic as well. Not only was he amazing, potentially could have been one of those guitar god type things, but it had so much feel and so much originality, so much uniqueness, you know, with song structure, with lyrics, with sound, all very original and unique.
The blood away, and the children will go back and play at killing a game in the clear shallows.
And what was the added layer that came, given that he was from Ontario, that he was at least somewhat accessible?
Particularly in his first solo album. And there's something about the feel of that album that you can feel Southern Ontario in it. And I don't know if that makes sense unless you were from there, unless you grew up there, unless you knew Toronto and the suburbs and the small towns. You could feel the winter, you could feel Southern Ontario. So it felt of me a little bit too.
First there's a click, then there's a breeze. Somewhere outside in the tree, the bathroom just sits, the memories of a million shits.
I spent some time sort of being upset going back to listen to Bob Marley and Bob Dylan, because I felt it was music that I missed out on, that its heyday was done. It was over. I wasn't a part of it. Whereas that was different with Martin Tielli. But it was also really special because outside in the bigger picture, it wasn't all that well known. Like the Rio Statics, they were definitely a Canadian band. They didn't do much outside of Canada at all.
And not even that well known within Canada.
Yeah, like they certainly had their fans. They'd fill a show from Toronto to Vancouver over the years because they were together for so long. so iconic in the in that way, but it's not something you hear on the radio.
Not playing stadiums.
Yeah, unless I was outside of my social circles. People didn't know who they were, wouldn't know who Martin Tielli was, wouldn't necessarily recognize the song. But my world was small, so they were kind of the gods in some ways. They were the band.
So what did it feel like to have a god come from that small world?
It felt really special. It felt like a secret, like some gem that you knew about that the whole world didn't get to share. So very much unlike Bob Marley or Bob Dylan. So I sort of cherished that, you know, too. And I'd never heard anything like his solo stuff before. I'd never heard anything like it. And it was so good.
And how did that inspire you as a music maker yourself?
Well, I didn't have any formal training or anything like that. I'm not super naturally skilled on the guitar or vocals or anything like that. But I think it inspired me to just let what comes out come out.
Black t-shirt says I heart rock. It's hard enough to sing to when you really you gotta move something new.
Sometimes I would be held back by being like, I don't know much about song structure. I don't know much about, you know, how to put this together, verse, chorus, or, you know, riffs and bridges and stuff like that. So it allowed me to just let the stuff come out, let it come out lyrically, let it come out by feel, because I felt my way through songwriting.
Even few. There's a dead sun on the highway of 1984, a frozen gas line, a lighter in you. You're running wild and free. Disappointment spreads quickly in a crowd.
Tell me about Bessie Smith.
So I was introduced to Bessie Smith by Jesse Bell Smith, dear, dear friend and musician from Guelph as well. Bessie Smith is blues. I believe she's known as the Empress of Blues. She was really tough and she was really strong. And she was really open.
He knows how to thrill me, and he thrills me night and day. Lord, he knows how to thrill me, he thrills me night and day. He's got a new way of loving, almost takes my. From
what I know about her life, she had a pretty rough life as well, a rough and tumble life. She was writing songs and playing music at the time that she was doing it, where it wasn't that acceptable for a woman to be doing what she was doing. It was considered sort of underground or the seedy underbelly of music or the scene. Billie Holiday used to go to brothels to hear her records.
Really?
Being played, because it's not something that was acceptable in the home. There were certain places she wasn't allowed to play because there was also a lot of sexuality in her music. That wasn't considered great. She also had to tamper that by using innuendo and stuff like that as well. And, you know, she talked about fighting and infidelity and bastard men and having the blues and getting loaded and all kinds of dirty stuff.
And
having sex.
And did all that appeal to you?
Yep.
Well, I'm down and feeling dirty, and I'm up to no good. Got my hands full of nasty, and my heart full of dreams, and a ghost that keeps haunting me. And a ghost that keeps
I'm really like that. There's a part of me that's like that, I suppose.
How did that contrast to women in popular music that you've been familiar with before that?
It was just so raw and rough, and it didn't try to be pretty. It didn't try to be songstress. You know, she just had this really deep, from-the-body sound to her voice.
All men so deceitful, they're getting worse every day.
I believe her influence, and I believe she was even trained by her, was Ma Rainey, even older blues, who actually taught her a technique to sing in a certain way that gave her the most volume. And that was done probably primarily because there wasn't amplification and stuff, and she was singing in the same way. So she had to have all this power in her voice.
Can't understand. There's two things got me puzzled. There's two things I can't understand.
So her music at her time was brave, and it was strong, and it was raw, and it was edgy, and it was funny, and it was sad, and in the standard sort of blues style. Also, a lot of women in blues were usually just the singer. It was about the band, about the musicians. Whereas in her case, it was about her. Most of her songs written by her. I'm sure she did some standards as well, but she did a lot of songwriting, which I don't think was as common then. She was really big. She's a big, tall, black woman, and I don't think she took a lot of shit from people. She had a reputation for not being entirely kind to white people either.
If you were to look at all these various people you've been naming and try and condense what you've learned from them all together, what would it be?
They were all really authentic to what they did, regardless of how it looked politically, socially, musically. They stayed true to what they saw as their unique form of musicianship. Front runners in many ways, lyrically very competent, all of them. Lots of passion, lots of beauty.
And is that what you aspire to in your own music making?
Well, I guess I have to say yes. Nope!
Passion, beauty, not important to me.
Not.
I just want to make a buck.
And they weren't afraid to express the beauty in the unpolished stuff, and the rawer side of things, and the rougher side of music or life in general.
Would you describe your own music in those terms?
I wouldn't say it's quite up to their level, but I would say that's where I come from.
The beauty and the unpolished.
Yeah.
Who's gonna sing you this love song? And who's gonna drive you to school? Where did all your friends go? Now that you got something to prove, I take back all my confessions.
For more information on Lindsay Robertson's music, go to lindsayrobertson.ca. I'm TJ Daw, and this has been a Totem Figures podcast.
Like I'm complaining. I care about that other gal. I got 20 bucks in my pocket. There's no use.